But Morgan, welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who are coming to the realization that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive, which means this program is not for those who rally around Bernie Sanders. I am Yoda. Our number, if you'd like to join us in this discussion, is 877-376-45. An avowed socialist running for president of the United States in a major, in fact, in the major political party, gaining tremendous traction for promoting socialism as the cure to the socialistic decay of America. His answer is to suck the one percenters dry. Let's just take everything they have. It's unfair. The game is unfair. They make too much. They don't need so much. Let's just take it away from them. That'll create jobs, won't it? Oh, yeah. Let's just say that he's a big deal.
Not only jobs. Jobs that pay you $15 an hour.
Oh, okay.
Don't forget that. That's also
okay.
Part of this thing.
All right. So I would ask you, if everybody makes the same, no matter what you do or don't do, why would anybody do anything?
They won't.
Would you go to work if the compensation for you sitting at home and doing nothing was exactly the same as going to work?
Not for very long. I mean, I probably would, but not
would you,
for very long.
Would you make an investment in a business if you knew that if you lost, you would lose everything that you had saved, and if you prevailed, then you would be considered a shyster. You'd be considered a scumbag that is depriving everyone else of the monies that they rightly deserved, and that money, if you made it, would not only be confiscated from you, but you'd be maligned in the process. Would you start a business?
Not a chance. Not a chance.
What in the hell is wrong with these morons that believe that Bernie Sanders is going to provide jobs, that he's going to stimulate the economy? I mean, you have to be so blankety-blank stupid that it's a shame you even breathe the same air the rest of us breathe on this planet. You've got to be the idiots with the coexist bumper stickers out there that are oblivious. And I've said for a long time that America is economically illiterate. But you know, I was talking yesterday where we were talking about the fact that, you know, when he was condemning the religious and political leaders, particularly the religious leaders, for having made merchandise of men, he said, but you've got to be accountable. You know, what do you say to all the people you victimized? And he says, it was my lover's house that did it to them. You know, don't blame me. House of love. You know, as I was driving yesterday and saw one of these idiots driving around with a coexist bumper sticker, you know, the other bumper sticker they had was love. I mean, that's the whole thing of political correctness. They haven't got a concept what love is. Because if you don't despise that which is harmful, you can't love. Not a clue. You know, if you don't have passion for that which is good and animosity for that which is bad, then you're not making rational, moral decisions. Love is way beyond your capacity. But it does show the harmony between those concepts. Yeah, I listened to a little bit of that debate, and I was just flabbergasted. You know, there was also a fact check at the end of it, and the fact check was almost universally that they either stated things that were untrue, stated things that were true technically but designed to be misleading, or true, but the journalist didn't recognize that they were irrelevant. You know, they're talking about new wealth gained. The majority of new wealth gained goes to the 1%. And a very small percentage of the wealth gained, new wealth gained, went to the bottom 47%. Hey, come on. The only way you're going to gain in wealth is through conceiving and advancing a productive idea. You don't gain in wealth because you are dependent on somebody else's idea. You aren't going to gain in wealth because you are on welfare, because you are on food stamps, because you're on Social Security. You're going to gain in wealth, and those that gain the most in wealth are those that make investments, those who advance ideas. Of course, there is income inequality. There is desire inequality. There is dedication inequality. There is responsibility inequality. There is capability inequality. Now, you play sports. Can you imagine what sports would be like if on every play, every player was evaluated and rewarded exactly the same way, the blocker and the rusher, the corner and the wide receiver, the quarterback and the linebacker. They were all every time evaluated the same. Everything is the same. Can you imagine how much fun that game would be?
Well, they're already trying to do that. I mean, everybody gets their participation medals, and they stop giving out like first place trophies and things like that. There's even places that don't even keep score. So, I mean, but it's not a game.
Look at the game they don't keep scoring. It's baseball. What's happened to baseball over the last 20 years in America? Hasn't it gone from the dominant sport to it now is listed by about 3% of Americans as their favorite sport?
Yeah, it's dying off. And the other sport that they do it in is soccer. And that, I mean, that's never caught on.
You know, so. Clayton Kershaw finally pitched a very good postseason game last night. But during the regular season, he's been the most dominant pitcher in baseball the last 4 years. Do you think that he would be making $30 million tossing a baseball if there was baseball pitcher equality? All pitchers pitch the same speed with the same movement.
No, he wouldn't even have a job. They just put a pitching machine out there.
Right.
You just put a machine out there that, you know, the ball's going to be right here, and since everybody has to hit a home run, well, we're just going to put this swinging machine there. And you
wouldn't be fair for somebody to get an out, would it?
Yeah, you'll just run the bases.
I mean, that is the communist concept. It's why it never works. It never has worked. It never will work. You can't have an economic system survive on from each according to their ability, because from each, if it's going to others, they're not going to work. And to each according to their need, because everyone is going to have a need. It's why every time communism has been tried in America, it's moved to socialism.
It is also
wholly destructive.
It also can't be on such a large scale. I mean, we got, 300 plus million people here?
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to work. That's never going to work. I mean, if it was me...
You can't have top-down management and have it work.
Well, yeah, and if it was going to be, me, you, and Larry all, decide that we're going to work together, that might work to where we're all splitting it, but you're going to be sure that the other two guys are making sure that that third guy is, you better be, hey, I need
you. Who's going to pay the government salaries when private industry no longer has any incentive? When private industry has whatever they make confiscated from them? When they have no money to invest? They have no money to do research, when there's no incentive to do anything in business.
Well,
who's going to pay for those government jobs? The government is simply going to create money and create the illusion of everybody working for the government, with the government simply destroying the value of the currency that it is using to pay people, and all you then have is blind faith in a completely bankrupt system. How long do you think it's going to last?
It won't last long at all. It won't last long at all. And I hope it won't. I would hope
this country, if a Bernie Sanders were to win the election, will cease to be economically viable at the end of his first term. How's that for a prediction? That's not to say that the other idiots on that have run for president, even if they're allegedly conservatives, they're just no better.
To be fair, to be 100% fair, there is a way that they could, they have the money out there. I mean, obviously, it's like you said, it's debt money. But if you took the funding from the military you could, you know, easily fund all these other things. But they're not going to do that. And
by the way, you couldn't. If you took 100% of the money away from the military, is about $650 billion a year. Our debt exceeds $650 billion a year, our annual debt. And so if you took 100% of the money away from the military, you would not be fiscally balanced in terms of your federal budget.
That's what I was saying.
And so you couldn't pay anybody anything else. But beyond that,
you're still running a deficit and you can't do
defense
that.
Is one of those few things that you can actually spend. I mean, while I'm totally opposed to our defense and I'm opposed to weapon systems, but at least you're buying products from private industry and you're developing an industry that happens to be America's best-selling products abroad. While I don't agree that your best-selling product ought not be weapons of mass destruction, you know, the fact of the matter is defense spending is more sane from an economic point of view than is welfare, than is food stamps, than is any of these other programs. You're at least paying people to produce something, paying people to engage, as opposed to paying people to be parasites.
Well, and nothing's free. Somebody always puts the bill. There's a bill that somebody has to pay.
And guess what? If I'm going to be maligned for footing the bill, and I'm going to be punished for having the capacity to foot the bill, I'm going to stop footing the bill.
And you'd be dumb not to.
If you took all of the one percenters' wealth, you couldn't fund the U.S. government for 1 year. Confiscated it all. That's why this is just this whole concept of jealousy. It's how Islam survives. You know, in Islam, every Islamic country is either impoverished or they're an OPEC monopoly. And what the Islamic states do is they say, yeah, sure, there's poverty here and there's no hope here and there's, you know, bad conditions here, but it's not your fault. It's the Jews' fault. It's those Americans' fault. It's other people's faults for repressing you. If the Jews weren't here, then you would have all of this wealth and you know, they're the reason that you're being held down. They're taking money from you. And that's the concept of class warfare that is promoted by the Bernie Sanders. It's not your fault that you're poor. No. Somebody else's fault. One of the most sickening and yet telling videos I have seen in some time. I watched this morning on my iPad. That's how I normally get my my news in the morning. You know, make a cup of coffee, feed the dog, not necessarily in that order. Turn on the iPad and read the news. And CNN, to their credit, showed what I haven't found on any of my other news feeds, not the Washington Times, not the Washington Post, not Fox News, not Yahoo News, not the New York Times, not Reuters, not the BBC, not the International Herald, none of them. But it was not on ABC or NBC or even MSNBC. But it was broadcast throughout Israel on their national television. It's this idea that the media doesn't want you to see anything that would provide a clear indication of the condition of Islam, the nature of Islam. A man named Muhammad Abdullah, or Abdullah Muhammad, he drove his car directly into an Israeli bus station. And not, you know, one of the, I shouldn't say a bus stop, bus stop. Sitting there in the bus stop, a little girl, couldn't have been older than 7 years old. Mother, bunch of other individuals just sitting there. Defenseless, not armed, not doing anything harmful. And this Muslim moron rams his car into them sitting there on the bench. Deliberately. And then once he has broken their bodies and they're anguishing on the ground, bleeding, this enraged Muslim moron, in his day of rage, grabs his knife, jumps out of the car, and he begins to hack the victims that are in agony already on the ground. Now, one Israeli pulls him off, holds a gun at him, says, you know, stop, throw down your weapon. And the idiot, the enraged Muslim moron, lunged at him, and he shot him. Didn't shoot to kill him, just shot him. He fell on the ground. What does this Muslim moron do? He's already run his car into a bus stop. He's already tried to hack his own victims to death. He's already tried to kill the man that just wanted him to stop. He gets up again with his knife and starts slashing. The Israeli shoots him a second time, this time kicking the knife away from him, giving him every opportunity to live, even though he has witnessed him create this savage crime, perpetrate this savage crime, screaming Allahu Akbar, giving credit to his wannabe God. And all of it's on videotape. It's, you know, there's cameras all around Israel. All of it's captured. Now, CNN, to their shame, said, we can't show you most of the images because, well, they're just too graphic. We can't let you hear what's going on because, you know, well, we don't want you to be judgmental of Islam. We want you to proudly wave that love and coexist bumper sticker in utter denial of reality as a morally bankrupt individual. But you want to know what Islam does to someone? Go watch that video. You can Google it because it's been all over the Israeli media. If you're squeamish and don't want to see the full version, then Google the video, which is Palestinian caught on video running car into Israeli bus stop. Stunning. It's just as absolutely stunning. Speaking of stunning and things revealing the true nature of Islam, White House spokesperson Josh Ernst said on Tuesday that there are strong indications that Iran's test of a new precision-guided ballistic missile on Sunday violated the UN Security Council resolution. That away, Josh, aren't you the guy that said that this was a great deal that the Abominator had negotiated? Now, I don't mind the fact that the Iranians said we only negotiated with the Americans on this one deal because our ultimate objective is the utter destruction of Israel, and that they then came to the United Nations a few weeks later and said that the United States was naive and totally capitulated on the agreement. And now they've already violated it, Josh. The UN Security Council prohibits Iran from undertaking any activity related to ballistic missiles that could deliver a nuclear warhead, but Iranian officials have pledged to ignore the ban. What does the Quran say in the ninth surah? Any treaty or agreement made between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim. For the abominator who knows Islam, who grew up as a Muslim, not to know that is impossible. Which means that he capitulated, giving Shia Islam what it desired most, relief from economic sanctions so that it could advance its arsenal of weapons and develop its nuclear bomb so that it could annihilate Israel. Congratulations, abominator. The Islamic State, this article says, the hardline Islamic State. A hardline. Okay. Islamic State called on Muslims to launch a holy war against Russians and Americans over what it called their crusaders' war in the Middle East, according to the audio message distributed by their supporters on Tuesday. You know, it is kind of like the crusaders' war. You know, it's the crusades were not an aggressive attack by Europeans against Muslims. It was a result of Muslims ruthlessly attacking Christianity, attacking Europe. Muslims crawled out of Saudi Arabia, enraged by Islam, and became the most vicious barbarians the world has ever known. And they not only conquered, but trampled, bludgeoned their way through Israel, through Syria, through Turkey, through India, through what is today Iran, throughout all of northern Africa, into Spain, going up into the Balkans, and they were savages. And so, as they attacked, conquered, and bludgeoned Christian Byzantinia, Europeans, finally, 400 years late, 300 years late, came to their defense and said, no, it's got to stop. You are savages. This has got to stop. And they tried to slow down the advance of Islamic terrorism. And that was the nature of the Crusades. Now, do I think that God endorses people to go off and do this? Of course not. The Crusaders were wrong, but the Crusaders were not nearly as wrong, if you want to make a comparison, as were the Muslims at that time. And so if you want to look at it today, the Muslims are the aggressors. Now, they're doing so, of course, with Western weapons, but they're the aggressors. They've turned Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Libya, most of northern Africa, most of eastern Africa, into terrorist hellholes. And so Europeans now and Westerners are going there trying to stop them. Now, that's not how you stop a religious war. You don't play into their hands, and we've talked at infinitum in this program about the appropriate response to Islam, and America's response is not appropriate. But nonetheless, it is if you want to look at this in context, which is the only way to understand it, these crusaders are trying to slow the advance of Islamic terrorism, just as were the crusaders so many years ago. This particular story reads, Islamic youth everywhere ignite jihad against the Russians and the Americans in their crusaders' war against Muslims. The speech by the Islamic State spokesperson Abu Muhammad al-Adani said, is jihad, it is holy war. This is an interesting extension of the discussion we had yesterday. We were talking about the single most important takeaway from the situation that occurred in the Ukraine with the downing of the Malaysian airliner, one that international officials responsible for flight safety failed the intelligence test, and we're going to read about that in this article, and they're still failing it. They're just oblivious. And products of today's indoctrination, as opposed to education and political correctness, can't make a reasoned, rational, moral decision. And number two, that America's creating of the mess in Ukraine and having sponsoring and motivating Ukrainians, the thug regime out of Kiev, to go bomb the ethnic Russians in Luhansk and Donetsk, causing those then to defend themselves, is created the environment where this was inevitable. And we should take responsibility for that. But yet, we want to blame the manufacturer of the weapon system as opposed to the country that caused it to be deployed. Those are the two important takeaways. But here's just a brief article. It says the missile's Russian state-controlled maker So it's a Russian state-controlled maker. Now, what is the difference between Lockheed Martin making a nuclear, or Grumman, making a submarine or aircraft carrier or fighter jet, being an independent business where every aspect of that business is financed and totally controlled by the U.S. government, and being a Russian state-controlled maker? I'm telling you, nothing. And therefore, this whole diatribe trying to say the missile's Russian state-controlled maker is just says that we don't understand the economics of America and how they're no different. Denied the claims made by the Dutch in their own report released Tuesday, trying to clear the Russian-backed separatists or Moscow of any involvement. Well, Moscow has no involvement. The Russian-backed separatists, in all likelihood, made a mistake. However, we don't know that for sure. The Russian experiments refute Dutch claims the missile was fired from Shchetny, a village that was under rebel control. So as the, and the, by the way, the Dutch never did any testing that shows where the missile was fired from. The Russians did, however. The village that was under rebel control. The Almaty anti in June also said that a preliminary investigation suggested the plane was downed by a model of Buk, which is no longer in service with the Russian military, but that was part of the Ukrainian military arsenal. Wow. Well, that is information the Abominator certainly never presented, did he? And his premature condemnation of Russia. The Dutch investigation additionally found, and by the way, that's consistent with what we had shared with you, that the implement of destruction was in the Ukrainian arsenal, and which means it was either used by the Kiev regime or by the Russian ethnic Russians who don't want anything to do with the Kiev regime because they confiscated it when taking over one of the Ukrainian military bases near Donetsk. The Dutch investigation also found the Ukraine should have closed its airspace to civil aviation and found states in conflict must have done more going forward to protect passenger planes. Yeah, that was the number one takeaway that we shared with everyone, is that the world is at fault for flying commercial airliners directly over, not just the Ukraine, but the war zone where the Kiev regime was bombing civilians, knowing full well that those in those communities had finally, in the month prior, achieved the ability to thwart the indiscriminate bombing of their cities because they had captured surface-to-air missiles and they had downed a half a dozen of those warplanes just in the previous month defending themselves. But yet, people are no longer accountable. That's the Bernie Sanders supporter. I'm not responsible for my own situation. So this is what the FAA responded and said, no one at that time was aware of the potential threat and possible use of sophisticated weapons. Kimkin responded, we couldn't have imagined that such a situation would have been possible because you're stupid. We were reading about what was happening in the Ukraine. We were sharing it on this program. It was common knowledge that the surface-to-air missiles were being deployed against the Kiev regime's consistent bombing of cities in the east, and that to defend themselves, these military aircraft were finally being knocked out of the sky. If you can't put two and two together under those circumstances, then you ought not be paid to do a job. You ought not be responsible for yourself, much less any other individual. It says the Buck missile exploded less than a meter from the cockpit. The missile killed three cockpit crew members on impact and broke off the front of the plane. The rest of the crew and passengers died due to decompression. Folks, at 30,000 feet, nobody dies from decompression. This is why I say, if you know any subject well, and I you know, a fair amount about flying airplanes and high-altitude airplanes, you know, I own a high-altitude airplane. I routinely fly the same altitude that this airplane was. You do not die of decompression at altitudes in the 30,000 feet. That'd be like saying that the guys that climb Mount Everest die of decompression. Now, you can eventually die of oxygen deprivation, but dying of oxygen deprivation takes a very long time. You, at 30,000 feet, you will lose functional consciousness, the ability to operate a sophisticated implement, say like an aircraft, in a matter of a minute. But you aren't going to die from reduced oxygen levels in the 30 to 60 seconds it's going to take that plane to fall from that altitude. Stupid, folks. If you know something about a subject, you know a fair amount about Christianity, Islam, Judaism, the Torah, the covenant. Know a fair amount about business. I mean, been in business, economics. A fair amount about airplanes. That if you know a fair amount about a subject and you read an article by any one of the major news agencies on that subject, what you'll find is that the preponderance of what is being conveyed is inaccurate. And it's because those writing don't know. And they not only don't know, they've been so indoctrinated with political correctness, they're incapable of exercising good judgment, so they don't understand. And so here's this individual writing this article saying that the passengers would have died due to decompression. There's not a single one of them that died due to decompression. It's impossible. Not at that altitude. Reduced oxygen level. Not a single one died from reduced oxygen level. The amount of time, and they're saying the 60 to 97 seconds between the plane crash. No. First of all, from that altitude, you're only looking at the amount of time to get below about 15,000 feet. Because even at 20,000 feet, you know, the first 10,000 feet, 20,000 feet, your useful consciousness is quite long. And your overall consciousness is essentially forever. And at 15,000 feet, which had been only half of the altitude, so now you're dealing with 30 to 45 seconds, you're at 15,000 feet, you can go all day. And so the amount of time isn't the time from the plane at 30,000 feet to crash. It's the amount of time from 30,000 feet to 15 to 20,000 feet where they're going to get enough oxygen. And you're only talking now about 30 to 45 seconds, and there is no one that is going to die from a lack of oxygen in that amount of time. Because it's not a complete lack of oxygen. It's just diminished levels. And just stupid, folks. People just have no ability to think. Then they say extreme cold. Yes, it's cold. Do you think that if you're exposed to air temperatures of minus 25 Celsius, which is not nearly as cold as minus 25 Fahrenheit because of the Fahrenheit scale, but minus 25 Celsius, air temperatures now. Do you think that you're going to freeze to death in 30 seconds? If you were in water that was 30 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 Celsius, would you freeze to death in 30 seconds? No. And in water, your useful consciousness is vastly shorter because of the surface tension than it is in air. surface contact. And so, no one in the history of humanity has frozen to death in 30 seconds. I mean, what? And then the other thing that would have killed them, they said, is powerful airflow. I'm going to tell you that even if you got the full brunt of the airflow, it ain't going to kill you, because at that altitude where the airplane is flying at 400 to 500 miles an hour, at that altitude, the air is so thin that the airflow is de minimis. Yeah, it's not going to feel good. There will be some flying objects. But in terms of dying from the airflow, wow. Then it says, it cannot be ruled out that some of the occupants remained conscious. Yeah, like virtually all of them. The only thing that would have caused somebody to go unconscious in that amount of time would have been if they were exposed within the cockpit and then hit by an object that knocked them unconscious, or they were hit specifically by shrapnel from the exploding missile, or they, centrifugal force can have a powerful influence. You know, when an airplane loses its ability to fly. We've got Glenn here, and Glenn, just quickly before the break, and you come back after. You want to make a comment on this?
No, not really. That's obviously foolish. But on the note of things not being what they appear, people are making bad assertions. Could you tell me where in the Psalms I could find the musical scores that tell me what notes were played with the Psalms of Code?
Okay, we'll talk about that when we return to Shattering Myths.